others. Which fleet do we fight? I watched the Oculus, where three fleets were tearing each other apart in the void. Every advantage we held, every advantage we had worked for all these decades, was hemorrhaging away like air from a ruptured hull. I could not reach Abaddon for answers, and what answers were there, even if he had been by my side? We could stand and die against one foe, or turn and die against another. We could not even flee in cohesion. Daravek had denied us our only avenue of retreat, and the Black Templar's remaining blockade prevented us pushing forth into the Imperium. The choice I faced was no choice at all. "The only way to survive this battle," I said softly, "is not to fight it." Ultio stared down at me aghast.
"We cannot disengage. We will be butchered by both sides."
I refused to let her horror or the promise of Abaddon's fury dissuade me. "I am not speaking of disengaging in an orderly retreat," I told her. "Hail Valakar aboard the Thane." She did so. I retook Abaddon's throne, the very throne that Horus had once sat upon when he waged war against the Emperor, and spoke to the Legion Fleetmaster. "Valakar, it's time to get the hell out of here." Valakar's voice crackled across a private command channel. His Olympian slum accent was almost a drawl, punctuated by the booming of the battleship Thane's weapons batteries.
"Easier said than done. Even a retreat will kill us."
"Not if we sacrifice several vessels to stay behind." He barked a bitter laugh.
"Oh, good luck finding volunteers."
I told him what I wanted and what was going to happen. He knew it was an order, and though he held rank above mine in matters of void war, he offered no argument. As proud as he is, and as much as the truth bit into his pride, Valakar had always been a practical soul.
"Give the order,"
he acquiesced.
"May the gods be with you, Kaon."
"I rather hope they're not," I replied before cutting the link. "Ultio, give me fleet-wide vox." The connection clicked and held.
"Fleet-wide vox," she confirmed.
"This is Lord Iskandar Kaon, commanding the Vengeful Spirit. I speak with the will of Lord Abaddon and bring the judgment of the Ezakarian. All warships do not, I repeat, do not engage Tagus Daravek. All engagement spheres will work in isolation to peel their embattled formations away from the Black Templars. Do not hunt for trophies or prize vessels. Do not seek to destroy any Templars' warships. Do not linger in orderly disengagements and drift into other engagement spheres to lend aid to other vessels. There is no time. You will be overrun. Recover your borders. Abandon any attacks and break off from the battle. Scatter the fleet. I repeat, scatter the fleet." The vengeful spirit came alive around me, powering up for what would come next. Amidst the acknowledgements, an unexpected reply crackled back.
"Magician,"
Lahior voxed, his voice rough and weary.
"Who volunteered to stay behind and cover the retreat?"
"I believe you can guess the answer to that, Firefist."
"Of course," he sighed. "And don't call me Firefist."
"Then do not call me magician. That is a word for children and charlatans." He hesitated then, though not because I had corrected him. I could almost hear his thoughts working through the barriers of the biting nails.
"We're not staying out of any sudden nobility, are we? We're staying because you want Daravek's head."
"Two correct guesses in the same hour," I replied, watching Daravek's armada swinging into view as the vengeful spirit came about. "This is a day of rare genius for you, my brother. Next you'll tell me you've learned how to read." Chapter 15. Lord of Hosts. Some hatreds cannot be overcome. The Nine Legions, subject to the whims of the gods that stir fate around us, have always been their own worst enemies. When Abaddon's name is spoken in awe, much of that hateful and jealous reverence is because he does what no other warlord can do. He unites the Nine Legions, even if only briefly, and leads them to war. Horus had half of the Imperium loyally on his side, organized, unified, strong. Abaddon has to piece together the armies of the damned from the depths of hell, where they have spent eternity drowning in their own madness and despising each other as enemies. Our chance to enter the Imperium as a potent and unified fighting force was broken, our ambitions cast away by the reality of Daravek's treachery. To say we ran from Daravek and the Black Templars is to undersell the scale of flight that took place. We did not retreat. We fled. The fleet scattered in every direction. Vindicta cast aside in the name of survival. Perhaps not one of our proudest moments, but certainly among the most tactically sound. There were no good choices. We chose the least of all evils. I will not deny that there was something of a cockroach's cowardice in what we did, scurrying away from the light of powerful enemies. But there was also laughter. We were abandoning the remaining Black Templar ships to face a fresh fleet, and we were leaving Daravek's legion hosts like sand slipping through their fingers. They had wanted to confront us and crush us, and instead the Black Legion turned and sailed in 100 directions at once. Within minutes, there was no cohesive fleet to even attack. It was not what we had wanted when we envisioned our escape from the Eye. It shattered all hope of waging a cohesive war, for this verminous scattering left us disparate and weak, each ship isolated within the Imperium. We were leaving enemies behind us, facing enemies ahead of us, and were beginning our war on the weakest possible footing. But we would be alive. Necessity, ever a merciless mistress, forced our hand. A formation led by Vortigern's ancient vessel, the battleship, with blade drawn, broke the widest hole in the Black Templar's blockade, through which several vessels managed to run to freedom. The stubborn Calibanite attempted to come back until I dissuaded him with a direct command. He was the first member of the Ezakarian to break free, and it was vital that he did what he could to reunite the fleet far from here if the rest of us fell. Ships broke off in the middle of attack runs, veering and rolling aside, awakening their warp engines with no regard for minimum safe cascade distance. I watched the withblade drawn recede on one of the insect-eye facets of the oculus, and I did not breathe easier even when it ripped a whirlpool of reality open to dive into the warp. This close to the eye, the warp was desperately unstable. All our warping ships were really doing was foregoing certain death for a likely one. Altio spoke of every escaping ship in a litany of focused, tight-voiced triumph. Life sparked in her eyes with each name.
"With blade drawn is away," she said. "Talonis Praxia is away. Excoriator is away. Zeta and Sigma are away."
I was watching the Zeta myself when it dove into its warp rift, and saw how the tendrils of lashing lightning from the wound in reality clutched at the ship and practically sucked it into the waiting maw. A Black Templar's vessel was within the range of its warp cascade, and the ship turned in burning, spiralling rolls, dragged into the rift behind the Zeta without the preparation of navigational arrays or its Geller field activated. I sensed the outpouring of panic and the brief harrowing agonies endured by the destroyer's 20,000 crew, as unreality flooded their decks, dissolving them and eating them alive. Several vessels were destroyed by their own warp cascades, and I still shiver to think of the many warriors lost that day. Their ships detonated on the lips of their warp tears, or were cut down by Black Templar's fire on the cusp of escape. I saw the Anchorite lancing into the warp, only for its engines to ignite as it entered, iron flying into the void and trailing fire in its death throes, thanks to a Black Templar's missile frigate. Nor was it the only vessel to suffer such a fate. So I will not say we escaped unscathed, but the bulk of our fleet did manage to tear itself free. The Thane sailed hard, weapons bellowing, drawing alongside the badly damaged Eternal Crusader. Altio's attention wavered then, and I suspect every psychically gifted soul in the fleet felt her hunger to turn back, to finish the Eternal Crusader herself, to recover our boarding parties and execute Sigismund's flagship in a firestorm of vindicta. for all of the Thane's size and strength. Even a wounded Gloriana battleship outclasses any rival. The limping, torn-open Eternal Crusader turned its guns upon Valakar's warship and ravaged it with barrage after barrage, taking precious little damage in return. Fighters spewed from the Thane's bays, and bombers swarmed in a slower tide behind them. All of Valakar's focus rested not upon killing the Eternal Crusader, but on keeping it engaged. He had to prevent it from chasing down our fleeing ships, as well as covering the withdrawal of our boarding parties and defending their returning pods. I watched the Thane burn, its shields down, its hull pockmarked with explosions, and I wondered if I had sent Valakar to his death. If I had, then Ezekiel, Telemachon, and the several thousand warriors we had deployed aboard the city-sized Eternal Crusader would die next. Even if they managed to take the ship within hours, as Telemachon insisted, they would possess a crippled flagship, her crew in open rebellion, and would be overrun by dozens of Daravex vessels before they could ever claim their prize. They had to withdraw. Valakar would impress that upon them, I was certain. As our fleet scattered, the vengeful spirit speared on. The Black Templars, faced with another fleet that vastly eclipsed their diminished strength, began to fall back themselves. They retreated in far saner coordination, racing for the system's Mandeville point to enter the warp at a safe distance, avoiding the threat of warp cascades. It ached to watch them withdraw, knowing they would sail across the Imperium and spread warning of our return. Any element of surprise we might have grasped had been cruelly stolen from our clutches. Daravek would pay for that. The Lord of Hosts was bold, and the flagship of his Cryptarus warband, the Death Guard battleship, Domina, sailed at the vanguard of his fleet. It pulled away from the troop ships it had been firing upon, and aligned with us, ready to pitch its might against the wounded vengeful spirit. They would board us, of that there was no doubt. The vengeful spirit was a treasure no warlord could resist. Our arrival forced several of Daravek's ships to break off from their slaughtering runs, and Ultio's laughter rang out across the bridge as she tracked them in a spread of hololithic runes. I followed the unfolding data stream, seeing at once what had spurred her amusement.
"His fleet," she said aloud. "It is disintegrating."
She was wounded and distracted, so I could forgive her hyperbole. But she was not entirely incorrect. The Legion host was veering apart, craft by craft, warband by warband. Their captains had returned to the material realm and had concerns far beyond Daravek's grudge with Ezekiel. They were tasting freedom as keenly as we had, and now took fate into their own hands, deserting him. "Do not fire on any warships abandoning the Legion host," I ordered. "Focus all fire on defending our troop transports. Come in close enough to entice boarders, Ultio. We want them to feel welcome."
"Compliance,"
she agreed. "And remain engaged only until Valakar reports recovery of the boarding teams. As soon as the Thane voxes success, disengage at once."
"It will be done," she promised.
As I watched Daravek's flagship power closer, Abaddon's words returned to me unbidden. From the night we had sparred, and he had delivered his judgment of my failings in Vindicta. "We stand on the edge of returning to the Imperium we built with our own sweat and sacrifice. Tagus Daravek will come for us before the end. I need him dead, Iskandar. No more excuses. I need him dead." Ezekiel, damn him, had been right yet again. This was why he left me aboard the vengeful spirit. Not out of distrust at all. Quite the opposite. My pulse quickened.
"Boarding pods incoming from the Domino,"
one of the human crew called. I was smiling now, unable to stop myself. "Naguel, come to me."
"Master?"
The beast rose from my shadow, melting out of the blackness, padding onto the deck behind me. I sent him a ripple of approval at answering my summons so swiftly. I drew sacramentum and observed my reflection in the silver blade. I was still smiling. Grinning, in truth. The face that looked back at me was all teeth and narrowed eyes, like Lehior when he fought for the war god's favour. "One way or another, Naguel, It's time to finish this. Though I have watched my homeworld burn around me, and have committed massacres and commanded genocides, I still balk to remember that day's battle in its entirety. Every action echoes within the warp, and the fighting was savage enough that the demonic choirs shrieked behind the veil with a multitude of monsters waiting to be born. For almost every soul aboard a warship, void war is a diminishment of the senses, with the world around you reduced to the tremors of the deck beneath your feet, the thunder of guns against the hull, and the tight, hot cacophony of fighting in confined corridors. Inside a warship, you are fighting through an expanse of territory the size and complexity of a city, and existence shrinks to the ceaseless work of fighting tunnel by tunnel, sealing boarding breaches or holding them open, answering relocation orders, following the layout hololiths, dragging bodies aside to clear the way or using them as barricades, all without knowing if the ship around you is already dead. Has the bridge been taken? Is the external war going well, or are you already doomed? How much of the ship is already overrun by boarding parties? There is no order, no overview. It is trench warfare, moment-to-moment tunnel fighting, and guerrilla insurgency all at once. Sanity returns only in the brief cessations when you steal enough time to calculate where you are needed next, or needed most. I was with the war gods more, the raiders and barbarians that fought beneath Lahior's banner. Their black armour was encrusted with the brass emblem of their divine patron, along with Chthonian runes and Nagrakali hieroglyphs promising blood and souls and skulls in the war god's honour. The Eye of Horus upon the Eightfold Path showed in dirty gold upon their battleplate. I fought with Nagual and Lahior at my side, killing to the metallic crashing of a heavy bolter and the guttural roars of a tiger-like beast that had been extinct for centuries. We advanced without thought of tactics, wading into the disorder, willingly becoming part of the wretched fever that possessed the ship's deepest decks. The hallways of a Black Legion warship are realms inhabited by innumerable horrors. Mutation is rife within the bowels of our vessels, proceeding unchecked and largely unknown, sometimes for entire generations. Clans of debased mutants and beastmen may dwell down there, but the deepest decks are often too hostile for any true mortal life. Squads and warbands are assigned on purging expeditions, and not all of them return. Those that do speak of entire bio-demonic ecologies thriving in the lowest decks, where the air turns to poison and the walls are rippling caverns of undulating flesh, crystallized blood and exoflora shaped from human bone. We fought Daravek's boarding parties through these halls, and we fought the halls themselves. Warriors that fell wounded were devoured by the ship, or by the demon things that lived within the ship's malleable bones. Revenants, centuries removed from any sort of genetic purity, leered out from the walls and vomited steaming black bile onto legionaries fighting on both sides. Colonies of blind and lost things that could not possibly conceive of sunlight rose against us, and we cleaved through these desiccated husks for the simple sin of daring to bar our way. Partially articulated corpses with amputated limbs shrieked and clawed at our boots. In one chamber we fought blade to blade beneath a roof comprised entirely of ivory. Only when stray bolt shells cracked the material above and sent shards clattering down upon our armour did I realise that somehow the dome above us was made of human teeth. Most of the time I could scarcely hear Nagual's roars or the gunfire of our advancing horde. The half-alive monstrosities that made their lairs in the choking dark pressed their lizard-brained thoughts against mine, filling my senses with stupid hungers and sick desperation. I was sweating with the effort of keeping their primitive urges from tainting my focus. Ultio was with us in the form of her syntagma cyborgs and war robots. They marched in ragged step, painting the air with gore with each sweep of their industrial claws and ionizing the reeking air with spears of lightning from their arm cannons. Flesh that was not truly flesh burned with a stench that defied natural law, its intestinal resonance clinging to our armor, infiltrating our oxygen supplies, sinking into our pores. I killed World Eaters that day. I killed Death Guard and Sons of Horus. I killed a warrior of the Alpha Legion, throttling him until his consciousness began to slip and then breaking his head open against the deck. I killed Night Lords and Emperor's children and Iron Warriors, and yes, even Thousand Sons. I put my blade through the open mouth of a charging legionary in spiked plate, and I hacked another into limbless wreckage. I pulled the front of a warrior's skull free with my bare hands. The sound he made as his head was torn apart was something less than human. I killed some of them with leaping arcs of incinerating warp lightning. I killed others by igniting the air around them with fell flame, birthing demons inside the incubating chambers of their hearts, or aging them by forcing their bodies to decay where they stood. The veil was thin amidst the destruction, and skittering, stalking, blade-bearing demons were brought into being amidst both sides, needing no summoning, granted genesis purely by the saturation of slaughter. Daravek's men killed us in return, depleting the Black Legion's ranks in the very heart of our own flagship. The butcher's bill for that boarding action ran into the tens of thousands as the intruders devastated their way through the crew. Of our warriors, the Riven suffered most, brought to the brink of annihilation. At times we were forced to vault their swollen bodies, the demons within them as dead as the space marines they had possessed. We hauled our way through dozens of corpses frozen in the warship, where demon and man melded into a lethal amalgamation of killing prowess. At times, both attackers and defenders used the Riven's bodies as barricades. Necessity, a goddess as cruel as any of the Pantheon, was surely laughing that day. Later I would care. Later I would reflect on the lives reaped. At the time, such thoughts were beyond me. I ran through the halls, my black battle plate awash with blood, yelling with Lahior and his men in undignified zeal.
Daravek!
I shouted aloud, my voice echoing through the mutated corridors.
Daravek!
I sent in brutal, blunt psychic pulses again and again. Nagual roared with every sending, his rage matching mine. I saw the ship through his senses as an ever-shifting haze lit by the flickering soul fires of living beings. I rammed Sacramentum down into the twitching bodies of the legionaries he tore apart and left on the deck, while he fell upon those I left wounded, eviscerating them with fang and claw. Never had we hunted in such harmony. I came upon Tagus Daravek in the middle of a firefight, as he sought to battle his way to the bridge. He was screaming Ezekiel's name in a frothing incantation, demanding that Abaddon show himself, whining that he was forced to massacre his way through the Black Legion's dregs because its overlord was a coward. It did not occur to him that Abaddon would be aboard the Eternal Crusader, let alone that my lord might already be dead, slain by a hand far more righteous than Daravek's own. The corridor was unremarkable, the same as any one of a thousand other thoroughfares inside the ship. The floor was strewn with an uneven ocean of wreckage from destroyed syntagma automatons. Bodies in black armor added shadows to the scorched metal and sprays of sparks. One of the wounded syntagma thalax turned its domed face up to me from where it lay on the floor. A bloody, wire-veined skull within the broken face dome stared out through the mechanical implants that served in place of eyeballs.
"Fane,"
it said in a distorted squeal of abused vocalization.
"Fane reports boarding parties recovered."
"My thanks, Ultio," I replied. "Now get us out of here." And then, looking across the battling warriors, I shouted,
"Daravek!"
and ran into the fray. I did not see Delvaris die. He was already a twisted shape at Daravek's feet, winged, crowned with horns, bearing weapons that had fused to his skin as he wore the war shape. The mangled, mutated snarl of his helmet's faceplate was slack in death. The axe blow that slew him had opened his torso from throat to groin, spilling a feast of wretched guts upon the floor in a heap that still quivered with remnants of demonic life. He had not been Ezekarian, but he had been a ranking Legion officer, both capable and loyal. In redeeming myself, I would also avenge him and his fallen brethren. It was with that thought in mind that I stepped into the iron-raining, explosive storm of bolt shells, a kind shield projected before me, altering all incoming energy into sound and light. It was like pushing a sun flare before me. Even I had to turn my gaze from it until my gen-hanced eyes adjusted.
"Assassin!"
I heard Daravek call.
"Where is your master, dog?"
He stamped on Delvaris's remains, grinding the secondborn's helmed head into the deck, triggering a spillage of cranial blood and pulped brain matter.
"Where is Abaddon?"
"He does not know," I realized. And in that moment, confronted with Daravek's ignorance, I felt the certainty of revelation. Ashokai's final words lashed through my mind, Tokugra's crude, stupid poetry conveying my former master's final prophecy. My answer was to charge, blade in hand. No more threats, no more words. I had learned my lessons where Daravek was concerned. He laughed and met my charge with his own. There was no knightly duel for us, no austere surroundings of awestruck witnesses. We ran at each other, shooting, cursing, sprinting, a scene no different from every other warrior around us. Axe met sword in the snarl of conflicting power fields. I chanted as I thought, repeating a Tiscan mantra of focus, channeling my will into my flesh to move swifter, strike harder. The effect was narcotic, and the lactic burn of overworked muscles was a small sacrifice for the chance to see Daravek's spined features go taut at needing to brace against my sudden strength. We were face to face, blade-locked and straining. A bolt shell impacted at the side of my knee, threatening to unbalance me. Three shells cracked and burst against Daravek's warped, cataphracti shoulders. He only heaved with renewed force. I spat full into his face, immediately rewarded with the hiss of dissolving flesh as the acid of my saliva started eating into his cheek. I had wanted to hit his eyes, but he twitched aside at the last moment.
"Give up, Kaon,"
he whispered with sickening relish. His cheek and the edge of his mouth was dissolving inches away from me. Yet instead of showing pain, he unfurled a tongue almost half a meter long and lashed it across my face. He chuckled as I turned my head, holding my breath against the stink of his infected teeth.
"Give up,"
he said again, the words laden with command. I was ready for it. I thought I was braced for it, yet my arms weakened in the wake of his words. My grip strained, my arms trembled, the battle around us no longer existed. Resisting his will was all I could do. My senses could tolerate nothing else. He was pushing me back. My boots skidded on the deck with twin grinding squeals. I spat again, only for him to weave aside once more. He came back grinning, assured of victory.
"Give me your sword, Kaon," he breathed into my face.
I could not speak. I could not summon the energy for anything but resisting his overbearing strength. Instead, I reached for his thoughts, my silent voice stitching through his mind in a jagged stabbing.
"No!"
As the single word lanced into his consciousness, I closed the clutch of my reaching thoughts around his brain. I snared his mind, cradling it, threatening to crush it, tendrilling my senses deep within his skull. Doubt flickered across Daravek's transfigured visage. His hesitation lasted less than a fraction of a breath, but it was enough for me to set my balance against him once more.
"I know how you followed us, Daravek. You followed me. Not fate, not destiny, not Abaddon. You followed me.
I suspected it the moment you broke from the storm. Ashokai dreamed of it long ago, without understanding the truth. I knew it for certain when I saw you bellowing Abaddon's name, unable to sense him. And there is only one way you can possess this much control over me." We are space marines. We know no fear. But what flashed in Daravek's crusted eyes was as close to fear as we can come. And by the blood of the Pantheon, it was a beautiful sight.
"Kaon,"
he grunted. I shook my head, refusing to hear. "You have something that once belonged to me." It was all the warning he had. I tore it from him, that aspect of myself that he had stolen through his own sorcery. That shard of my soul that had allowed him to pretend he had conquered and killed me at Drol Kir. That piece of my heart that let him remake my memories. That element of my psyche that allowed him to manipulate me and defy my every attempt to kill him. I ripped it from his blood and brain, forcing us apart in a telekinetic burst, my hands curled into claws, as if tearing the truth from his body were a physical act as much as a psychic one. It did not come willingly, and it did not come gracefully. The essence streamed from Daravek's flesh in ribbons of misty blood, coalescing, taking form. I backed away, blade in hand, knowing the shape it would take, telling myself I was ready for it. If I could kill it, Daravek's hold over me would be nothing but a shameful memory. The essence shifted, whirled and formed. The creature that stood before us, defending its new master, glared with white eyes cracked by lightning-bolt blood vessels, baring its obsidian teeth in bestial challenge. Nagual roared back. He matched the beast's size and bulk, his fur formed of the same smoky corpus, his claws and jaws the same unbreakable black glass. My Prosperine saber-toothed tiger roared, louder than any sound I had heard before, louder than any sound I have heard since. A demon's rage and hate poured into a single word, a name. Gaia. The wolf, once my wolf, turned to face this new foe. They leapt as one, both huge demon beasts crashing through the ranks of fighting warriors, a flailing tempest of flashing talons and biting fangs. I was already running. Sacramentum sang in the physoline stinking air. Daravek parried, his axe raised to deflect, but Sacramentum, the blade forged from the scavenged sword of the Primarch Sanguinius, cleaved through the lesser weapon's haft and kept falling. It fell through Daravek's hand, splitting it in twain, through his armored wrist, severing the arm at the elbow, and biting deep into the Lord of Hosts' collar, sinking in a crunching snap all the way into his chest.
"Draconian,"
said Tagus Daravek, meeting my eyes in disbelief. I wrenched the sword up, out, and free. The Lord of Hosts' head rolled away, tumbling beneath the shifting feet of the battling warriors nearby. His rotten wings fell like decayed sails, slapping wetly onto the deck. "Nagual," I sent. "My lynx." Gaia was howling. Nagual was snarling. The former sound was the kicked dog whining of a wounded canine. The latter was the wet snarl of a great feline hunter making its kill. Felines, when fighting for their lives, will bite at their foes' throats, and if such instinct fails, if they are pinned onto their backs beneath another predator, they will kick with their hind legs to rip open their prey's belly and disembowel their foe. Nagual was doing both. Gaia, this tainted, changed incarnation of the wolf that had served me loyally for so long, was above the lynx. She should have been snapping her jaws down at Nagual's face, but the tigress cat had his saber fangs deep in the wolf's throat, while his huge clawed paws tore at the canine's flanks. Kick after shredding kick tore demonic ooze from Gaia's belly, spraying corpus slime with every slashing rake. With a roar that would have done a true Prosperine lynx proud, Nagual rolled and hurled the wolf aside. Gaia's shredded bulk crashed to the deck before me, and I advanced upon her, clutching Sacramentum tighter. Nagual pinned her, jaws clamped around her throat again, keeping her borne to the ground. He radiated a proud rage, and I pulsed back wordless, relieved gratitude. He had served me well this day. Gaia looked up at me. She knew me. I saw it in her eyes. But she was no longer my demon. The tutelary that had guided my studies on Prospero was gone, as was the demonic familiar that had saved my life and possessed a Fenrisian wolf, becoming my huntress for so many years until Horus Reborn destroyed her. Now I knew why I could never resummon her. Now I knew why all my knights psychically reaching into the warp and sacrificing human lives in the attempt to recall her to my side had failed time and again. Daravek had claimed her for himself. My first and most precious demon, to whom I had bound myself far too closely years before. She had become a pawn, as had I in Daravek's long game to destroy Abaddon. The wolf that had saved my life so many times snarled and frothed and writhed as it stared hatefully up at me. I lifted Sacramentum. though my sword would rise and fall many more times in the cleansing of the boarding parties threatening the vengeful spirit, as we purged the remnants of Daravek's failed ambition, no other blow pained me like that one.
"Stay dead this time," I told her.
"Let me remember you as you were, not as you have become." She barked bloody froth. The sword fell, and the last evidence of Tagus Daravek's plan to become War Master of Chaos was banished with the dissolving body of a demon wolf. Chapter 16. Silence. Days after the battle, the silence was still deafening. Yet there was safety in that silence, the very antithesis of the eye and the battle we had fought to break out of it. We hid deep in the true void, the vengeful spirit and the Thane drifting together in the space between the stars, surrounded by a significantly diminished flotilla of escorts, light cruisers, and captured Black Templar's frigates. Soon we would need to reunify our scattered fleet, but for now we drifted in hidden serenity at one of the prearranged muster points, preparing for the coming war. I stood with Nagual, distractedly running my hands through the demon's fur. I listened as my lord spoke of the future.
"This is an opportunity like no other," Abaddon said to me.
His voice crackled from the speaker vanes at the sides of his Medicaid tank. He floated in suspension fluid similar in both shade and blood-stained taint to the amniotic fluid within Ultio's life support cradle. The three of us were alone. This deck's apothecarian was empty upon pain of death. A squad of the Aphotic Blade stood guard outside, and only the Ezekarian were permitted to enter. Of the Ezekarian, only Amuriel and Iliaster were permitted within to tend to our lord's wounds. A rebreather mask, bound to his face, supplied oxygen and conveyed his words. He was stripped of his armor plating, his pale bulk in the murky fluid somehow reminiscent of a necromantic experiment. The scar began at his cheek, then thickened as it descended to his collarbone, ending at the ruination of his chest. Sigismund had struck true, destroying several of my lord's internal organs, necessitating their cloned regrowth. I'd offered to heal him with my biomantic manipulation. "I can encourage the flesh to regrow," I pointed out. It was unreliable, but no more so than cloning. He had refused. It was, he stated, a matter of trust. By relying on Iliaster's cloning ministrations, he proved the depths of his trust in Iliaster. "Cloned organs are vulnerable to cancerous growths," I pointed out, to no avail. Cancer was, after all, nothing more complex than natural cell replication gone awry, and adding artifice to the process only heightened the risks. But Abaddon's mind was made up. As he floated in the tank, naked of armor and dressed only in a plethora of old scars, that age-old suspicion resurfaced amidst my thoughts. He had always been huge for one of our kind, and had always possessed his Primarch's features, in the way many of the former sons of Horus tended to do. It was common knowledge, even during the Great Crusade, that no space marine took after their Primarch as obviously as Ezekiel Abaddon took after the War Master. But seeing him, stripped of battleplate and pretension alike, the similarity between dead father and living son was nothing short of revelatory. I finally gave voice to a question many had considered, yet none had dared ask. "Are you Horus?" His golden eyes glinted with amusement. He dragged in a slow breath through his rebreather.
"I am Ezekiel Abaddon,"
he said through the Medicaid's tank speakers. "That is not what I meant." I shook my head and gestured to him. This immense figure in the suspension tank, with slabs of muscle over muscle and a demigod-like stature that had led to this legend being whispered throughout the Nine Legions, a legend that would one day be whispered across the galaxy. "Are you Horus? Are you his clone? His son?" He laughed, the sound wet and tinny over the speakers.
"What do you believe, Kaon? Do you think I am?" I saw no reason to lie. Yes, this delighted him. I was not sure why.
And if I were, brother, if I were merely Horus remade, recrafted, with a twist in my gene code here and an alteration there, would it change anything?
I had to think about that. I looked into his eyes, but saw no answers there, only amusement.
Perhaps you have always been a genetic twin of your Primarch. Or perhaps Ezekiel Abaddon was slain in his pilgrimage across the Eye, and you were one of Fabius's creations in his place.
How am I to know? This, too, delighted him.
So, yet again, we come back to trust, my brother.
So it seems.
Let me ask you this, Kaon.
What does it matter?
Clones, sons, fathers. Let the herd whisper whatever truths they choose. Our eyes are set on worthier goals. We look to the future, not the past.
I acceded with a nod, knowing that there was no answer to be had here, knowing ultimately that he was right. It did not matter. At least, not if he was on our side.
You spoke of an opportunity, I prompted. You did the right thing, he countered.
I flinched, taken by surprise.
You were right to scatter the fleet, brother.
I know, but it's gratifying, nevertheless, to hear you agree with my actions.
And you slaughtered Tagus Derevik. Did I not tell you that you could?
He shifted in the suspension fluid, his eyes wild and bright.
And was it not, as ever, a matter of vindicta?
It was, I conceded.
Between our freedom and Derevik's death,
he began, and his gaze turned fierce, shining with ambition.
Opportunity dawns like never before. The Templars will return, and they won't be alone. They'll bring the wrath of the Imperium at their backs. And what will they find?
Is this question rhetorical?
Humour me, my assassin, humour me.
They will find worlds aflame, outposts destroyed, fleet yards raided, shipping lanes plundered.
All true. But they will find raiders and reavers performing those acts, scattered warbands and isolated warlords, not an army, not the Nine Legions.
I saw where he was leading now.
And with Derevik dead, there has never been a finer time to unify the Legions in the hatred we share. Once we have unified the Black Fleet, we will bring the warbands of the other Legions to heel through temporary alliances and offers of mutual warfare. Some will betray us. Some will reject us. But we need unity now, Kaon. Let us rise above petty piracy and wage open war once more.
It sounded grand, and it was the perfect truth. But it was not the truth entire. A silken thread, too fine for an unaugmented human eye to make out, lay on the deck. It was approximately a meter long, the shade of a dead tree under an overcast sky. A hair. A hair to match the faint scent of Abaddon's previous visitor. I wondered how long ago Moriana had been here. I did not need to wonder what she had said.
Open war in the segmentum, I dare to say, will also serve your other purpose.
It was not a question, nor did he insult me by feigning ignorance.
Drachnaen calls, Kaon. That weapon will be mine.
Nefertari had protected Moriana throughout the boarding actions. I would in time come to regret giving her that order, and regret how well she had obeyed it. But I did not yet know what a curse the blade would become, nor the madnesses that its black spirit would whisper into all of our minds. Even if I had known then, would I have argued? Abaddon would never have listened. Ambition is ever his closest brother, closer even than the Ezekarian. Tell me something, I said, before I leave.
Speak.
Sigismund, how did he wound you? Abaddon fell silent, the vicious vitality of ambition bleeding away. The black rebreather covered much of his face, and the murk occluded some of his expression. But I believe for the very first time I saw something like shame flicker across my lord's face. How curious.
He wouldn't die, Abaddon said at last, thoughtful and low. He just wouldn't die. I did not need to skim his mind for insight. Just from his tone I knew what had happened. He baited you. You were lost to rage. I saw the muscles of Abaddon's jaw and throat clench as he ground his teeth. It was over before I knew he had struck me. I couldn't breathe. I felt no pain, but I couldn't breathe. The black sword was buried to the hilt, like the old man had sheathed it inside my chest. Ezekiel's voice was soft across the speakers, cushioned by the bitterness and fascination of reflection. His words were almost staccato whispers, each one a drop of acid on bare flesh. The only way to kill me was to welcome his own death, and he did it the moment the chance arose. We were face to face, like that, with his blade through my body. My armor sparked. It failed. I lashed back. His blood soaked the talon. He fell. I remained quiet, letting Abaddon's tale unspool. His eyes were looking through me, not seeing what was, but what had been. He wasn't dead, Cale. He was on the floor, sprawled like a corpse, disemboweled and torn in two, but he still lived. I was on my knees, forcing my dead lungs to keep breathing, kneeling over him like an apothecary. The black sword was still through me. Our eyes met. He spoke. I did not ask Abaddon to tell me. I reached into his thoughts then, tentatively at first, in case he rebuffed my presence. Then I closed my eyes and saw. The Black Knight, fallen and ripped apart, his sword brethren gone or dead, I did not know which, red staining Sigismund's tabard, red decorating the deck beneath and around him, red in Abaddon's eyes misting his sight. Blood. So much blood. Here, at the last, he looked every one of his years, with time's lines cracking his face. He looked upwards at the chamber's ornate ceiling, his eyes lifted as if in reverence to the master of mankind upon his throne of gold. Sigismund's hand trembled, still twitching, seeking his fallen sword. No, Abaddon murmured with brotherly gentleness, through the running of his blood and the heaving of his chest. No, it's over. Sleep now. In the failure you have earned. The knight's fingertips scraped the hilt of his blade, so very close, yet he lacked the strength to move even that far. His face was the bloodless blue of the newly dead, yet still he breathed. Sigismund, Abaddon said, through lips darkened by his own lifeblood. This claw has killed two Primarchs. It wounded the Emperor unto death. I would have spared it the taste of your life as well. If you could only see what I have seen. As I stared through Abaddon's eyes, I confess I expected the triteness of some knightly oath, or a final murmur in the Emperor's name. Instead, the ruined thing that had been first captain of the Imperial Fists and High Marshal of the Black Templars spoke through a mouthful of blood, committing the last of his life to biting off each word, ensuring he spoke each one in shivering, sanguine clarity.
You will die as your weakling father died. Soulless, honorless, weeping, ashamed.
Sigismund's last word was also his last breath. It sighed out of his mouth, taking his soul with it. In the apothecarium I opened my eyes and found I had nothing to say. Words eluded me in the wake of Sigismund's final curse.
Falcus brought Sigismund's body from the Crusader, Abaddon told me. He carried it himself.
Still I said nothing. Whether he desired it as a trophy, to join Tagus Daravec as an articulated skeleton crucified above the oculus,
or whether he wanted to desecrate Sigismund's corpse to some divine end, I could not guess. Abaddon looked incomparably weary once more, and I took the quiet as my cue to leave. He did not object. "There is something I must do," I said by way of farewell. "One last thread to cut." He did not answer, nor did he watch as I left. He was seeing Sigismund again, dwelling on replies he could never speak to a brother he had once admired, and who had died despising him. I sensed no sorrow from him as I left. I sensed nothing at all, and that hollowness, that emptiness, was somehow worse. Sargon had gathered a small conclave of warriors within his suite of chambers, and they stood in the candlelit space of his prayer chamber, speaking amongst themselves, awaiting the former word-bearer's chaplain to begin proceedings. I had asked Sargon to gather them, and to take their sworn oaths in the privacy of his sanctum. If I sent the summons myself, it would have woken their suspicions in ways I wished to avoid. 11 in total. 11 surviving warriors that had witnessed the battle between Abaddon and Sigismund. It should have been 12, but Zaidu was not there. Telemachon had done as he always did, and ensured his favoured lackeys answered to no one but himself. I chose not to let it concern me. I had business enough with these 11 souls. 2 of them were warriors of the Shrieking Masquerade. The rest were from Amuriel's warband, the Flesh Harvest, warriors he had trusted with his life on countless occasions. Sargon bade them remake their oaths of silence, oaths they had already sworn to Telemachon and Amuriel aboard the Thane, murmuring vows never to speak of what they had seen. No one outside those present for the duel itself could be allowed to know that Abaddon had come so close to falling in battle against Sigismund. Such unwelcome truths had no place in the legend we were carving. They all reaffirmed without objection, honoured by the ceremony. Each of them knew that deceit meant death, and that keeping their word meant the Ezekarian would look upon them with favour. This could be a grand opportunity. Leadership of squads, even lieutenant's roles in a warband, were not out of the question. Fate had given them leverage and brought them close to the Ezekarian. They had no desire to squander this opportunity by proving themselves unworthy of it. These were the thoughts I felt from afar. The ambition, the temptation, the hunger. None of them had broken their oaths. They cherished the chance to be loyal. Sargon consecrated them one by one with blood blessings of the eightfold path, gently drawn upon their foreheads with a gore-wet thumb. He dipped his fingertips into a bowl of slave viscera, and whispered that the Pantheon would look kindly upon each of them for keeping their lord's secret. When Sargon was done, he tipped the bowl to his lips and drank the remaining gore. With care and patience, he placed the empty receptacle down and gestured for the warriors to leave, thanking them once more. They filed through his training room and across the bare metal deck, not yet beginning to speak amongst themselves. Their auras were alight with pride, with the sense of being inducted into secrets that were denied to their brethren. The bulkheads at the north and south of Sargon's armory sealed on grinding tracks, ending with cacophonic bangs of metal on metal. As both doors crashed closed, I stepped from the shadows before the 11 warriors. I did not say anything. The charade was over. Even if I had wanted to speak, there was no time. Several of them realized what was happening at once. The 2 raptors of the Shrieking Masquerade cried their piercing weaponized hunt calls, reaching for chain blades and gunning them to life. In the same moment, 4 of the others went for their bolters and opened fire. The shrieks drifted past me, ignored. The bolts slammed and burst against a kine shield I raised with a gesture of my bionic hand. I did not tell them to surrender and give in to the inevitable. I could have promised them it would be swifter and without pain if they accepted their fate, but I did not wish to lie to them. It was going to hurt, whether they submitted or not.
"Hold fire! Hold fire!"
one of them, a squad leader, roared. He battered the others' guns down.
"Lord Kaon,"
he said, and looked at me with the faith of a true believer.
Lord Chaos, you don't need to do this. We swore an oath. We would never speak of what we saw.
I admired his level-headedness. I did not admire his naivety. Nagual leapt from the darkness, the tigress cat's size and weight bearing the sergeant to the deck and eclipsing him in moving, clawed shadow. Ceramite warped. Blood arced and stank in the air. The remaining 10 warriors moved without unity, shouting and firing and charging and seeking to flee. I hurled them away in every direction, pinning them to the walls with an outburst of telekinetic force, slamming them back against the iron in mimicry of high-gravity acceleration. Each attempt to wrench an arm or leg free of their pressurized bindings ended with the limb thudding back into place with magnetic force. Enough. The beast stopped its noisy feasting at once. The sergeant was still alive. He lacked a functioning throat, a chest, and one arm, but he was still alive. The remains of organs pulsed slickly, slowing in the broken shell of his chest.
Lord,
he managed to murmur through black, stinking blood. The man's endurance was nothing short of amazing.
Don't give us to your elder.
I smiled at the man's dying request. I could at least grant his last wish. You are not traitors, I replied. You will not suffer a traitor's fate. Goodbye, Sergeant Havelock.
Lord!
Sometimes I still wonder what he was going to say. His attempts to speak were cut off by the blackening and swelling of his flesh, by the splitting and shattering of his armor plating, by the unformed words melting into a throaty scream of mutating vocal cords. Feathery wings burst, tattered and bony, from his back. The elongated avian beak that stretched and cracked from his face was stringy with bloody saliva. Come, Nagual.
Master,
the demon acknowledged, following me at once. I left the chambers with Sargon and my familiar at my side. Once the bulkheads were sealed again, I relaxed my psychic grip on the 10 warriors pressed to the walls. The way they clawed at the hull and the sealed doors was almost musical, the muffled sounds of their captivity. Bolters barked, sounding like distant thunder. Bodies crashed against metal. Legionaries shouted and then fell silent. Something vast cawed loud enough to shake the corridor outside the chamber. But I'd been careful in my preparations. The creature, a ragged, black and raven-like example of its demonic choir, would be weakened at once by the sigils of draining imprinted upon the walls. Its lifespan in the corporeal realm was measured in a matter of heartbeats after its executioner's duty was done. Already its enraged laughter began to fade as its physical form dissolved. I looked to Sargon. I apologize for the mess you will find in there. He blinked slowly, uncaring. I doubted he would even allow his slaves to cleanse the chamber. He had no aversion to such decorations in his sanctum. I left him there, left him listening to the Lord of Change dying in banishment, and returned to my other duties. With the Black Legion scattered and weakened, we had to ensure its first crusade was not destined to be its last. Soon we would bathe Segmentum Obscurus in fire.
That is his blade. I know that sword. It is Sacramentum. You lie. You lie. Chaon would never allow himself to be captured. You lie. You lie. You breathe lies. You lie. My brother would flense your souls, wither them, peel them from your bodies. Chaon is not here. You could never capture him. He cannot be here. He would come for me. He would carve your souls from your bones. He would save me. Chaon. 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 Please, Chaon.
From the Infinity Canticle, sequestered by the Holy Order of His Imperial Majesty's Inquisition as an Ultima-grade moral threat, purported to be the unedited raving confession of Sargon Eregesh, Lord Prelate of the Black Legion. Terror. We are free. Free of our prison, sailing at the vanguard of a colossal invasion of Imperial space. Our escape plunged the entirety of the Segmentum Obscurus into war. The conflict that raged for decades,
that which you call the First Black Crusade, would eat at our resources as much as it replenished them, stealing as many gains from us as it granted. You know of the purges and sterilizations and recolonizations that followed the war, seeking to sear our existence from the minds of the Imperial faithful. We have forever been the Imperium's dirty little secret, the truth never more pronounced than when the Adeptus Terror moves upon its own citizens, forcing them to forget we ever existed. And there is so much yet to tell of the First Black Crusade, with its years of protracted war against the increasing tides of Imperial resistance. There are those among the legions that regard the devastating conflict as an unmitigated victory, and there are those that see nothing but harrowing loss in the defeats they sustained. The truth, as ever, is in the grey that exists between the black and the white. We did not call it a crusade. To us it was the opening campaign of the Long War, and even that suggests a level of organization that could scarcely exist. There was no overall conflict to judge. It broke down into 100 wars between individual fleets and warbands, rampaging their way through the segmentum. Warlords from the 9 legions sought their own glory. Champions shed blood and raided slaves and offered sacrifices in the myriad names of the pantheon they either willingly served or courted for favour. Cadia was no fortress world in that era, and lacked the defences it boasted in the millennia since. But the Imperium rose against us with inevitability, if not alacrity, and we were forced into a protracted war that devastated both sides. The Black Templars and the Imperial Fists led the war. The vengeance they inflicted upon us wove scars across flesh, armour, and pride that some of us bear to this day, 9,000 years later. Soon I will speak of Uralan. Soon I will relate all that transpired in the Tower of Silence, where Abaddon claimed the demon blade, Drak'nayen, that weapon of lies and broken promises. We had to fight for years to reach Uralan, and then we had to fight our way through the many madnesses that infested the spire itself. It is but one story in the Black Crusade that unfolded. But if we must pause our interrogation here, then allow me to speak of one final matter. It will grant you a greater understanding of my legion, its noble savagery and its dark codes of honour, and perhaps offer insight into the prisoner you see bound before you now. This was something we shared with all humanity, but I suspect even your inquisitorial masters may not know it ever happened. Let me tell you, Soroka, of how we truly declared the Long War. It was not with the anger of the vengeful spirit's guns, nor with the garbled, shrieking vox transmissions of burning ships and falling outposts. No, I speak of the formal declaration, unknown even among the 9 legions, but for the Ezakarian that gathered at Abaddon's side. You see, even in our vaunted malignancy, we still observed the formalities. War must be declared. Sigismund was chosen for this responsibility. It felt right that he should carry our words back to the Imperium, back to the throne world itself, and it was a solemn conclave that gathered around his corpse. One of the Black Templar ships served as Sigismund's mausoleum. I was one of the 4 warriors that had carried him there, a pallbearer for our first Imperial foe. We had laid him upon one of the command tables in readiness. Abaddon handed me Sigismund's blade, not the sword of the High Marshals, for that was gone in the hands of the surviving Black Templars, but Sigismund's favoured blade, the black sword that had ripped through Abaddon's own armour. My lord bade me carve our declaration along the length of the blade, and I did so with the point of my ritual Jamdara dagger and the acetylene kiss of psychic fire. Once it was done, we lay the cooling blade upon Sigismund's corpse and closed his hands around its hilt. No effort was made to hide the wound that had slain him, nor to mask the mangled ceramite and bloodstained mess of his tabard.
The Night King's chin was bathed with bloodfall as well. Abaddon wiped the worst of it from the old warrior's bearded features with a care that would astonish any imperial witness. Abaddon touched the slash across his own face, a mark left by Sigismund's blade, a mark that Abaddon would carry with him down the many centuries to come. He keeps that scar to this day, a reminder of one of the worthiest foes we ever fought, and the moment the Great Crusade truly came to an end. The ship we chose was the light destroyer Valorous Vow, a name I found almost saccharine, but one I had to confess was at least apt. We crewed it with servitors and sacrificial slaves, and ensured its databanks were spooled with all available data of the First Battle of Cadia, from our emergence from the Eye to the breaking of the Black Templars, even down to Helmfeed imagery of Abaddon's wounding and Sigismund's death. We held nothing back, pouring in all of the objective, wordless data and hololithic recordings for the Valorous Vow to carry back to Terra. From the bridge of the Vengeful Spirit, we watched the small, swift vessel turn away from the fleet and tear a hole in reality, before plunging into the warp on its long journey home. The distress beacons we had lit aboard her suddenly fell silent, as did the repeating loop of its active transponder. It would declare its name and its burden until its destruction. As we watched it vanish, sucked into the miasmic puncture in the universe, we hoped it would make it to its destination. We would learn many, many years later that the Valorous Vow did indeed reach Terra. The message we sent was delivered to the High Lords themselves, though there's no telling how many heard it beforehand, and what they made of the Valorous Vow's appearance. In my own imaginings, I like to picture the High Lord's lackeys boarding the ship in Terra's vessel-choked orbit, and moving chamber by chamber, corridor by corridor, every step closer towards revelation. Surely they killed the servitors and thralls we left aboard as crew. So be it. I shed no tears over their fate. But what did those first Imperial souls think when they looked over the carcasses strewn across the command deck, as their weapon barrels cooled and their chainswords idled? What passed through their minds as they approached Sigismund's funereal form, rotting in his armour, yet honoured by those that had slain him? And what did the High Lords themselves make of our declaration? Did one of them cradle the first black sword in her hands? Did one of them touch my inscription with his bare fingers? Did they return Sigismund to his bloodied chapter? Or does he lie on Terra, entombed on the same world as the Emperor he so ardently served? Did they stare in disbelief at the data recorded in the Valorous Vow's archives? And if they gave credence to the footage and the hololithic spools, did they feel any sorrow or regret at not trusting Sigismund in life, when they had believed us dead and gone, leaving him as the only sentinel out there beneath the Eye's light? The message Abaddon commanded me to sear into the Black Sword's steel was not long. You might think it would be a boast, the petty glorification of one warlord over another, or a spiteful threat in the wake of our freedom. It was no such thing. The message was a mere three words. I burned them into the Black Sword with an artisan's care, feeling the weight of history upon my shoulders as I worked. And in my mind's eye, I can see the High Lords of that dim and almost forgotten age, their naked eyes narrowing, their bionic replacement lenses rotating and half-sealing, as they too felt the pressure of history shroud them at the sight of the three words I had carved. You know what those words were, do you not, Inquisitor Soroka? Is that a smile I hear in the faint wetness of your moving mouth? Why, I believe it is. With those three words we declared the long war, words that would in time rise from our throats as the battle cry of the Black Legion, words that encapsulated all that we had been and all that we had become. We are returned.
That was Black Legion by Aaron Dembski-Bowden, read by Jonathan Keane. This recording is copyrighted to Games Workshop 2017.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this programme.